Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
A very good morning and welcome to the programme. And I'm joined in the studio today by Sinn Féin leader and TD for Dublin Central, Mary Lou MacDonald. Thank you very much for being
pleasure,
here
Claire.
And for coming in. Now, when we last spoke on this programme, your party were at an all-time high at that time in the polls, 37%. We don't place a huge emphasis on polls on this programme, but we look at the trends, as I'm sure you do too. You're at 22% or thereabouts now. Have you been able to identify what's happened, what's going wrong?
Well, Claire, first of all, thanks for having me. It's nice to be in your spanking new studio. What I sense out there is an impatience. That's how I would describe it, an impatience for change. Back in 2020, there was a real sense of momentum, that change was possible, that a change of government was possible at last, after almost a century of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, that there could be a new government and a government of change. And I think 4 years on, people have struggled with the cost of living. The housing crisis is still with us. And I think we have a job of work to do to reignite that sense of belief that still now, that change, that kind of necessary change can happen.
But if that impatience were there, and if that were right, then you would be still seen as the option. Have you been leading the race for too long?
Well, no. You see, the impatience that I'm describing to you, unfortunately, I think led for some people to almost a sense of weariness. Now, interestingly, out on the election campaign and talking to people about the local elections and the European elections, people understand that those elections aren't going to change the government. But for the first time, again, after 4 years of what have been for so many families and communities, 4 tough years, people again have a chance to come out and to make their mark and to vote for change. And there's, Claire, a lot of noise in the political atmosphere. But when you actually take the noise away and when you boil things right down again, fundamentally, the choice that exists for people is quite simple. Either Sinn Féin get our chance to be in government, to deliver change, and we have to perform in that, or you're looking at 5 more years of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And I have to tell you, that prospect is one that fills people with certainly dread.
On the subject of noise, I know Jen Bray from the Irish Times went out with some of your canvassers and candidates. And in her piece published at the weekend, she reports people shouting traitors and sellouts at canvassers. Like, what do you think is going on when that happens?
I think that, first of all, it is important to say that that is not the standard practice when you're out on canvas. I mean, those incidents can happen, but that is not the vast, vast, vast majority of people, including those who have concerns about immigration, are reasonable, are respectful and want to have a conversation.
But it does happen. And I'm asking you, why do you think it's happening to Sinn Féin candidates?
I think that, unfortunately, because of the housing crisis, primarily because people are really under pressure, because government has abjectly failed to have a plan in respect of dealing with immigration. I mean, the sight
of people... Why are your people being blamed for that?
Well, let me just finish the point. The sight of people sleeping in tents on Mount Street along the Grand Canal, of course that alarms and disgusts people. It's not acceptable on any level. Government have failed, but there has been an element on social media and elsewhere who have chosen for political reasons to direct that at us. So let me just say again, that is a noisy minority. Most people expect from us and deserve reassurance on the issues of migration, what kind of system we need, a system where the rules are enforced, where decisions are made efficiently, and where people, everybody, is treated with the level of fairness and respect, people and communities. And clearly that hasn't happened. That's on the government,
well,
not on us.
There's a school of thought that a cohort of your voters have very hard views on immigration and that you're off message with them.
A whole cohort of people who vote for us are under the most incredible pressure, particularly in terms of housing. So if you put yourself in the in their shoes, Claire, let's imagine you're living in a house or a flat. You've got adult children living with you. The living conditions mightn't be great. You might live somewhere that's very damp, that's very cramped, very small. And you look, you've waited and waited on housing lists. And you see no real prospect of moving on. You see no way out. I understand on a human level, in those circumstances, when people then see and hear lots more people coming, more pressure into the system, a government with no plan, a government with no interest in even communicating or dialoguing with communities, of course that causes an anxiety. And then when you have, unfortunately, some who would wish to kind of weaponize that genuine, and I understand it, that human concern, that can turn into something.
You were accused in the Dáil of conflating the two issues, immigration, accommodation for asylum seekers, and the housing crisis. Micheál Martin put that to you.
Well, Micheál Martin has put a lot of things to me for Micheál Martin's own reasons. The only conflation that I'm making is to state very clearly that government has failed in terms of its planning and management of immigration. And the evidence is that of that is clear to see. And they have failed spectacularly and over a prolonged period in terms of coming to grips with the housing crisis.
Do you intertwine
crisis.
The two,
Those
though?
Are two.
Because when you were talking about accommodation for Ukrainian people coming here, you said that the government was heaping crisis on top of crisis. You said that in the Dáil. So, I mean, are the two interlinked? And are your supporters right when they say you it's one against the other here?
No, it should never, ever be in terms of people trying to get by and provide for their families and do their best. The place we do not want to be is where it's person against person. That's horrible. It's divisive. And it fails to lay the responsibility where it rests. And you ask me, is there a common thread between these things? Yes, there is. We have a bad government. We have a government that has failed, a government that is failing. And ultimately, the people will have to make a decision. Are we to continue with that, or are we to make a change? Mm-hmm. And that's where the politics of the moment is.
Okay, because Donica O'Leary from Sinn Féin said the temporary accommodation for people seeking protection needs to be an entirely separate stream from the mainstream housing system. So
Correct.
Does that mean that we'll have a two-tier housing system under Sinn Féin, one for Irish people and one for people who are not
no,
from
no.
Ireland?
Well, it will mean that you will have a housing system including lots and lots of affordable housing for people who currently earn too much to access social housing or council housing, but earn far too little to actually buy houses that are now at extraordinary prices. You will have a housing system, and then you will have an international protection and migration system that is properly resourced, where the state actually plays its full role.
So you wouldn't change the existing system then, would you?
Well, what we would do is ensure, firstly, that we have a coherent rule book and that the rules are enforced.
So what would you change about the system as it is now?
So the first thing that we need to do is we need to increase the resources in terms of processing of applications. We need to double. Government have acknowledged
what
that we need
to
processing
in a third country?
No, I'm not in favour of that. I think our first job is to make sure that the system we have in this state actually works.
So the rules that are currently there, you just want to see them enforced?
We want to see them enforced, but we also want
Which
to...
Which is what the government is saying right now.
Well, look, the government is saying a lot of things, Claire. The important thing is not so much what government says, it's what government does, because ultimately they're the ones with the power to take decisions for good or bad. And I think if I was to identify the one really obvious mistake that government has made again and again and again was their failure to communicate respectfully with communities. And we've seen the consequences of that. I think they have caused tensions, divisions within communities that could have largely been avoided if they had acted with common sense and treated people with respect. And a lot of what you hear on the doorsteps when people are raising the issue of immigration, and by the way, it's an issue, it's not the issue. The issue is housing. But when the issue is raised, people fundamentally want to know, do we have a system that's fit for purpose? Do we have a government that's fit for purpose? Is there an adult in charge? Do they have a plan? And are they actually engaging respectfully with communities? And are they resourcing those same communities? And the answer under this administration is no to all of the above, but they're all absolutely achievable.
Okay, well,
objectives.
There's a job of communication coming up now, because we know Catherine Day's report recommends permanent accommodations, asylum centres, accommodation centres, at least six now, she says, should be built immediately before the end mm-hmm. of the year. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I mean,
where should they be?
She said they should be on appropriate sites where people can have the dignity of proper accommodation. Catherine Day made that recommendation a long time ago.
2021,
yes.
It was accepted. But in terms of communities, should they be able to veto where they are?
No community looked for a veto, Claire. That's a complete misnomer. The communities, and I can speak, I represent some of them. What communities wanted was a proper conversation. They wanted the reassurance that when new people come into the community, who they are, where they're going to be staying, what their day is going to look like, what kind of supports are going to be there, what kind of additional resources are going to come into the community. I have to say to you, I think those are really reasonable asks. I think for any of us, in any of our communities...
But when all of this blew up, you had the same message for these people. There was nothing different coming from you and coming from the government on this in terms of communication. Like, where is the point of difference here?
Sorry, there is a stark point of difference. Whereas the government, sometimes in the dead of night, brought in busloads of vulnerable new people to communities and places that they were totally strange to them, without any notice, without any communication with any community stakeholders, and created desperate tension, all of which could have been diffused. And I said this to the minister at the time. I think thought it was a terrible, disrespectful mistake that they made over and over again. What would I have done? I would have had the basic common sense and respect to know that any community you go into, you will find, without too much effort, the different stakeholders in community development, in youth work, in the churches, in the sporting organisations. And when you're proposing to introduce new people to a community, you go and you talk to the stakeholders and you will find very reasonable.
And what are you saying to them?
Very compassionate.
Are you saying we've vetted all of these people?
No,
like, this is a very dangerous road to go down. Are you seeking approval from the community for these people to come in?
Please don't put words in my mouth.
But that's not my intention.
No,
but I'm trying to figure out how it would work in practice.
How it works is you go into the communities. It's not difficult. You find the people concerned. You sit down with them. You explain who is coming. You explain why. You explain the nature of their accommodation. You explain and you listen to the community. You explain what their day is going to look like.
What happens if you do all that and the community says no, not having it?
Well, I have to say to you, Claire, and I think I don't think I could be clearer on this point. I think where you do that in good faith and where you demonstrate the respect of that conversation, where the government is realistic and accepts that new people into a community already under pressure has to be followed with new resources, where you do that, you cut down by a huge amount any misunderstandings, any tension and much of many of the things that we have seen. And I think it was a huge mistake that they made. I said it to the minister at the time, very clearly, very directly. They didn't listen.
Okay.
This government doesn't listen.
You mentioned housing. It's a huge issue on the doorsteps. That's what you're hearing and you're seeing. What did you mean when you said the average house price in Dublin should be 300,000?
So imagine this, that we live now in a situation where people at work, nurses, people working in retail and factories and all sorts of different jobs have no real prospect of buying or affording their own home. There are people who earn too much to be on the social housing list and don't qualify for a council house if there was one to be got, but equally who can't get a mortgage to buy their home at runaway prices. So what we need is a scheme that is tailored specifically for that cohort of people.
And how do you do
that? And those homes need to be affordable. You do that by using public land strategically and smartly. You do it by the state building affordable homes that these people can buy, by the state taking
on... Do they owe them outright then? Are these private sales?
No, they do. You do it by the state taking on all of the land development costs and bringing in homes... €300,000 and
the
less,
state,
depending on
the
their
state
location.
The state is absorbing the cost here, so the taxpayer is absorbing the cost.
The state absorbs the land development costs and the state owns the land. The purchaser owns their home to do with what they wish.
Okay, so
right?
This places a burden on taxpayers because look, houses at the moment, you're talking about houses about 420, you bring them down to 300,000. So there's 120 per unit there that has to be funded out of the state, right?
Well, I am talking about an affordable housing scheme. This is tailored at that specific cohort of people who are squeezed in the middle.
So they'd have to qualify to purchase. They'd have
yes.
to qualify to
yes.
be allowed to purchase
That's
these
correct.
Homes. What about the people who have managed to scrape together the 420, let's say, to buy a house and who are really worried about this strategy now because they say, well, am I going to be in negative equity because of this? Because I'm going to be surrounded by houses that cost 300.
Do you know the ironic thing I heard when people were responding to our very reasonable assertion that we have to have a scheme that provides affordable housing for people who are otherwise locked out of the housing market. And by the way, many of whom are saying to me directly, if affordability doesn't get sorted out, we are leaving the country and we're not coming back. And lots of them are young people. They're not all young, but lots of them are young. And the response from some, ironically from those who actually caused a property crash and cause massive negative equity and all of the hardship
that brought.
I'm not
talking about
those
people. I'm talking about the people that you know, the nurse and the Garda who have scraped together the money to buy the house. What are you saying to them about what their house is going to be worth if this plan succeeds?
I am saying to them that the scheme that I am describing is for that cohort of people who need access to affordable housing. The housing, we need capacity at all ranges and all levels.
So a byproduct of this
really
might be negative equity for some people,
but they have to just take that. No, I don't know. I don't know why you're claiming that. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you recall, but in the last general election manifesto of Fianna Fáil, they made a commitment of 50,000 houses to come in under the €250,000 mark. Now, I challenge you to go and find me one of them. They didn't follow through on it. Mm-hmm. They have not been built. This government produces what they call affordable housing and it's 400 and 500,000
euros.
Okay, but
what Sinn Féin said about this €300,000 house was that your aim would be that would be the average house price in Dublin. But what you're describing this morning...
That's the affordable price.
You're describing an affordable
Correct.
Housing scheme,
Correct.
Not an overall average price.
No, I mean, a pilot...
This is a scheme.
Sorry, Claire, just in case people didn't realise, I think people are sensible enough to realise a pile in Dublin 4 or Dublin 6 is not going to cost you €300,000. Of course, in the property market, you're going to have homes at all different value levels. That's the case now. That'll be the case under a Sinn Féin government if we get our chance. But the difference will be that we will price in genuine affordability for people who are currently locked out, let me repeat, with no prospect of ever owning
okay.
their own home.
Let's move on. There's an increasing focus on the border area. I mean, as the leader of an all-island party, are you uncomfortable with the fact now that there are spot checks, policing operations happening between Belfast and Dublin?
Well, look, we're 25 years into a peace process. People who live in the border area up around Donegal, Monaghan, Cavan will tell you they come and go and life goes on there. The common travel area has always required cooperation between the PSNI and the Gardaí, and that will continue. That's exactly as it should be. So I'm
you're
not comfortable. Uncomfortable.
You're comfortable.
No,
with
that's
it.
As old as the common okay. travel area itself. So I'm not uncomfortable with that at all.
So what would your message to government be? Ramp up those controls at the border.
No, my message to government is, as we've discussed at length, get the system right. Give us a system where the rules are enforced, where decisions are made efficiently, and a system that treats every person and communities with respect. Resource it properly. And if you do that, but if you don't do that, and if the government continues to muddle along, then we are going to have the problems that we have.
Do you
it's about getting the decision-making system
Do you
system
believe that
correct.
There are many people coming into the Republic of Ireland from the UK via the land border?
Well, you heard mixed messages from government as to the numbers on that. I would say to you that actually, irrespective of how people get here, the point is when people arrive here, is the system fit for purpose? Can it work? Do we have a system that's responsive and efficient? Currently, that's not the case. The border itself is vast, you know. And as I say, we're 25 years into the peace process now. People have to come and go, live their lives, go to school, go to work, do all of
but
their
business.
But you
have no issue with people being checked when they come from Northern Ireland to the Republic?
Well, the Garda and the PSNI do spot checks on buses. And so that's always been the case. No, I don't have an issue with that. Our issue has always been and would be any suggestion of remilitarisation of that border. And throughout Brexit, as you will recall, the very long process that we went through to ensure that that could not and would not ever happen. I should also say there should be no border on our island. Okay. That's my ambition.
Let's talk about the economy now. And I want to ask you who thrives under Sinn Féin, because we saw from analysis of your last budget plans, the 2024 budget, your party had the smallest tax and welfare package and there wasn't much there to separate you from government. So who does well under a Sinn Féin government?
People who need to be housed, people who worry night in and night out over the level of rent that they're paying. I mean, I cannot believe, actually, I don't know how in some instances people make the rent levels to €1,000 and more than that in some cases. People who are looking for affordable childcare, people who care about a decent and fair society, people who have an interest in community development, investment in community, investment in our young people, investment in youth work. People, all of those people have a stake in and will prosper and flourish
because
in a Sinn Féin government.
People are asking, you know, what does a Sinn Féin government really mean when we hear about Piers Doherty off, you know, with the IDA, Davy Stockbroker saying, don't worry, lads, it'll be OK. We're not going to disrupt the successful economic model here in Ireland.
Well, you see, I think most people don't have a difficulty squaring all of what I've described to you around what is. And by the way, I haven't described anything extravagant. I think that's about getting the basics right, a basic, decent foundation for everybody to have their opportunity and their chance here. And at the same time, recognising that, yes, we want investment. We want good jobs. We want well-paid jobs.
But do you, though? Because when you look at what you have planned for higher earners, those who are on over €100,000 will have a gradual reduction in their tax credits. So you're saying to the multinationals, don't worry, all is fine, but we're going to hammer your well-paid employees.
Well, no, actually, there'll be a taxation surcharge if you have an individual, and let me stress, individual income of in excess of €140,000. We're not into hammering.
No, but the tax credits, there's a gradual.
The pension credits.
No, gradual reduction in tax credits in your plans for those on over 100,000. That's on top of what you have planned for people on 140,000, which is the solidarity tax.
Yeah. So we are not in the business of hammering anybody. We are in the business of running a fair and a properly resourced system. And we take the view that people with the widest shoulders and with the deepest pockets, yes, should shoulder a little bit more than people who are on low incomes.
Yeah, but you could also say that you're saying to people, forget about your ambition here. You know, if you're in college at the moment, don't be looking at that job that might pay
Claire,
you over 100,000, over 140,000.
You are not seriously saying
that. Well,
I'm
asking you, is that the message that you're sending out to people?
No,
because
it's not.
It looks from your plans that you are going to hammer
no,
them.
Claire, I don't know. We've just talked at length about housing. I have just told you that I have lost count of the number of doorsteps where young people, and by young, by the way, I'm being generous, I'm talking about people, you know, well into their 30s. They're primary school teachers, they're nurses, they've done the whole college thing. They've come out with their qualification. They cannot afford a home. They cannot afford rent and they cannot afford to buy. So if there is one singular push factor for our best and brightest to actually leave here and go to Sydney or Toronto or wherever it might be, it's the issue of housing. If there is one significant block to many of those people having been away for some time coming home, it's the issue of where will I live? That is the question. And by the way, in conversation with potential investors, with people who are looking at Ireland and saying, is this a good place to do business? The single biggest issue that they consistently raise with me
is, I'm sure, it's housing.
Is housing,
but
and
they've
accommodation.
Also got to look at your tax plans. If they're planning to bring high value jobs in here, they've got to look at those tax plans and say that's not attractive for those people.
Claire, the businesses that come and invest here, we have an incredible workforce. Our productivity rates are fantastic. Our demographics are fantastic. Our level of skill and education is of high caliber. The companies and investors that come here are highly, highly profitable. Let me assure you, on their scale of concern, their first thing is, if you want to invest here, bring talent here, keep talent here. They have to have somewhere to live. And on the issue of taxation, let me also say this. It's the job of government in a balanced and a fair way to run the economy and society and to make sure that we have sufficient resources, that we have equity. And companies would look at Sinn Féin and at our proposals, see the logic of what we're at, see what we're doing. And the one thing...
But you've told them you're not going to rock the boat. You've
told
them
that.
Well,
you're suggesting that we are rocking boats. I'm saying to you that we're going to have plans that are
sensible.
You've dropped
the wealth tax.
We haven't actually, but that are sensible and that are workable. And what business and investors generally want, along with everybody, I guess, is a sense of the direction of travel.
Okay, on the wealth tax, the figure from that was dropped from your alternative budget last year. It was supposed to be 1% on people who had assets of over €1 million. So what's happening with that?
So we have never factored the wealth tax into any of the spending projections that we have for current or infrastructural spend. The ESRI had been gathering data. It became kind of difficult to get an exact figure, because when Pearce went and the team went to calculate all of this, some of the data wasn't being gathered. It is being gathered now. Our idea for a wealth tax is not to tax people's family home, which is currently the property tax is dressed up as a wealth tax. It's not. It's a tax on your family home. The one asset
is it gone or not, the wealth tax?
No,
the figure
we still
is
have
gone.
It. We still have it as a proposal. But I have told you, because we can't be exact in terms of the figures, we have been very, very cautious, very, very careful not to bake in a figure in respect of our projected spend.
But you are still going to do it.
Still,
it's going to be in
believe,
your manifesto.
We believe in a wealth tax. What we do not believe in is a property tax that penalises people for acquiring their own two up, two down, or their own semi-D. The only single asset that most of us, most working people actually have is the family home that you've worked your whole working life to have. So we think the property tax is wrong and we price in the removal of that.
Okay, the carbon tax is something as well. You don't agree with increases in that area. It's going to bring in nearly €10 billion up to 2030. €5 billion of that will be for energy efficiency, including retrofitting homes. And some of those retrofits are happening for people on social welfare. There'll be €1.5 billion for farmers, €3 billion for the just transition. So where are you going to find that money if you freeze it?
Well, let me just say firstly about the carbon taxes. The EPA had a very interesting report, which reflects that government again is going to miss its climate targets for 2030.
Well, we know that, but my question to you is, where are you going to find the money if you stop increasing
it? Every proposal that we make, and you see it, budget, pre-budget submission after pre-budget submission, all of our figures are add up and everything is costed fully.
Will you stop the retrofitting programme?
No. As a matter of fact, we have a proposal to overhaul and improve the retrofitting scheme.
And where will you find
I was speaking to somebody actually yesterday in Phibsborough who's looking to retrofit a home, and she and her husband described to me the huge difficulties that they have had accessing the scheme. I've spoken to others in different neighbourhoods where one house is done, another isn't. We want a scheme that is much more inclusive and that's actually area based.
And how will that be paid for?
It'll be paid for through the state. There isn't a shortage of money, Claire. And everything that we propose...
But it's a lot of money. It's
of course
10 billion that's come,
yes,
going to come
the,
from the
carbon
tax.
The government is also spending an awful lot of money. The money is there. All of our proposals are fully costed. Had you wished a detailed discussion on our budget, I would have brought and had in front of me to my eye the
but
precise
figures. But it's pretty important, you know, that carbon tax will be increased to 10 billion up to 2030. We know Sinn Féin want to freeze those increases. So what I'm asking is, where are you going to fill the gap?
Well, let me tell you what... something very immediate that needs to happen. The government are proposing again to hike up the cost of petrol and diesel in August and in October. We believe that they should put a stop to that. It's very clear to all of us who've been out on the ground the extent to which people are struggling.
That's the excise.
And struggling badly. And we believe that a stop should be put to that. That would cost 59 million euros. And I think the government should make that announcement. It's particularly acute in rural communities where people still rely very, very heavily on a car to get to work, to get their children to school and so on, where there's no viable public transport system.
So listen, whatever happens at the weekend with these elections, we know that we are less than a year away from a general election. What is the pathway to office for Sinn Féin? Coalition with Fianna Fáil?
Well, look, our ambition has always been and remains to have a government of change for the first time without Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in office.
But you're open to conversations with Fianna Fáil.
That's the objective. Well, hold on, hold your horses,
I read some of your candidates telling Jen Bray in the Irish Times they issue with that.
So did I. And fair play to them.
And how do you feel about that?
And you're asking me, and I am telling you what I've said a million times. I'm sure people are now sick maybe listening to me. I believe we have a real opportunity at the next general election. And again, a choice will be made at the end of the day. Is it a government led by Sinn Féin, a government of change, or is it more of the same old saying of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil back in government for 5 years with all of the consequences that we've discussed that brings? So when the general election comes, we will field, currently in the local elections, by the way, we're fielding 335 candidates in every local election area.
Yeah, but you're getting away from my question, which is, can you do business with Fianna Fáil?
I want us to have a government without Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
How would you do that?
Well, you go out and you, this is what I'm describing to you, you run your candidates, you seek the mandate, you put the proposition to the people, they come out and vote. That's how this works. I mean...
Is your target a single party Sinn Féin government then?
My target is to win as many votes as we can on Friday initially, but then in any general election. My objective is to win as many seats as we can, and my objective remains, I think the best outcome that we can aim for is a government that doesn't have Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael for the first time in the history of the state.
Yeah, but at 22%, you'd need to double your vote in 7 months.
Yes.
You think that's possible?
I think that the appetite for change, I've described to you earlier on at the beginning of our conversation, that sense of impatience for change, a little bit of weariness because it's been 4 years, because despite all the rhetoric and the spin, if you have a child who needs a special, who has needs and needs an assessment of needs, you're waiting and waiting. Housing is a mess, all of that. So a little bit of that.
Has that weariness, do you think, served to brand Sinn Féin as an establishment party now?
No, we couldn't be anything further from that. You couldn't find a party that is less establishment. And it's actually, when you're out on the ground, I guess, canvassing very intensively and going in and out of communities. The difference is that Sinn Féin is a party that really believes in equality, that represents working people, not vested interests and fat cats. We are a party that believes in investing in communities and our young people. And that marks us out as very, very distinct from the old parties of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who have been happy to kind of govern in the interests of, I don't know, the guys they hang out with in the Galway tents and the Brown Envelope Brigade and all of that. We could not be more different.
Mary Lou MacDonald, thank you very much for coming in. We'll be back after this.